This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, to share down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Now, if you have a question for Zorba, call us at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about.
Yes, six things that drive doctors nuts. You like that, don't you? You like that it is.
Okay.
And why do doctors wear white coats? What does the AMA say about it? And what changes are we going to see?
Good topic. I don't have a clue as to why people wear white coats.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Okay, and we have a good recipe.
Chili beef kebabs, great for this time of year, great on the barbecue, tasty. It's got beef, it's got chili, it's got Tom's stamp of approval. That means go for it.
Okie doke. Don't forget our medical myth buster coming up later in the hour. And Zorba, let's get to the phones. A listener joins from Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. How are you today?
Good. How can we help you?
How can you help? Well, you can reach in my back and unpinch my sciatica, and I'll be on my way.
So you've got a sciatic problem.
Yeah, I'm about 3 days into the third week of a pinched sciatic nerve on my left side. And it's still quite painful.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, sciatica can be just awful and awful and awful. I mean,
yeah.
When you get it, it's just painful. So how often does this happen to you?
Well, I've only had this one other time about 17 years ago.
Wow.
And it lasted about 6 weeks, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And the curious thing is, right now, as then, the medical community seems to be split down the middle as to how to handle it.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. The half of it online seems to be just be still and leave it alone. It'll go away. The other half is be proactive and stretch and things like that. And so I thought I'd see what your opinion might be.
Well, a couple of questions. But overall, I'll tell you what my thoughts are. Overall, it's very important for any pain in your back at all. The scientific studies show getting up and moving around, I'm not talking about the treatment, but getting up and moving around is far better than bed rest. Bed rest is old-fashioned, outmoded, and doesn't work. Now, when I say that, some people can't get out of bed. That's different. If you can't get out of bed, it's okay. But there is no scientific proof that bed rest helps, and there is good scientific proof that bed rest is bad. So split down the middle, the guys who say you got to stay in bed, that's absolutely wrong. But how we treat it, there are different ways that we treat it. So a couple questions. Does this pain go into your butt? Does it go down your leg? Is it just in the back? Tell us what that pain is so we can feel your pain.
Well, so far it hasn't gone the route that my previous episode did, which eventually, after 4 weeks, did go all the way down the leg. So far it's at the top of the back and just about halfway down the glute.
Excellent. And by the way, that's usually an upper nerve root around L1, L2. That's usually where the upper pain is. When it goes down the leg, it's when it's sharp and bright and knife-like and lightning-like, that's really a much more problematic thing. So I've got a few suggestions. Number one, get moving. Do not stop moving. Absolutely number one. Number two, stretching exercises are key because you want to make sure your back is limber. Now, where do you go for stretching exercises? Go to the website, zorbapastor.org. We're going to put some stretching exercises on there for you to look at. And basically, these are exercises that stretch out the hamstrings that can be problematic. And the piriformis muscle, which is right around where the sciatic nerve is, it's a big problem. And if we can get the piriformis muscle to stretch out, that helps. The other thing is, don't sit on hard chairs. Sit on soft chairs. So if you've got a hard chair of any sort, you want to bring a cushion with you. You don't want to put any pressure on the sciatic nerve. When you're in bed, you want to have a bunch of pillows. Lay on your side so you're more comfortable. Not on your back. On the whole, on your back is going to make it worse. On the side is going to make it better. And generic Aleve, one or two tablets twice a day. My preference is two twice a day. If your tummy can tolerate it, 98% of the people that can, will reduce the inflammation help you sleep at night and decrease that pain. And generally, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks. Now, what about manipulation? Massage, chiropractic, some people find it works. Some people find it doesn't work. Acupuncture, some people will find it works. I'm for active, and that means stretching and moving that bod.
I'll do that. And the chiropractic the last time around didn't work very well, so I'll stick with the stretching, I think.
Sounds perfect.
Thanks very much for your help.
A pleasure.
We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener now in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, hello to you both.
How can we help?
Well, I have kind of an odd and somewhat embarrassing story to share. About 3 weeks ago, I found a worm in my stool, a very large worm, about 7 to 8 inches long.
Ooh.
And so I did go in to see a family practice doc and went on an antiparasitic medication. I took mebendazole. So I have a lot of questions, but one of which is, you know, how long could this thing have been living in me? And I'm trying to figure out, does it make sense to do any type of homeopathic system cleanses to try to either be 100% sure that this is really gone or try to prevent it from coming back?
Yeah, Zorba will have some answers to all of those questions. My naive question is, do you have any other body effects from this? Do anything hurt or any feel anything different because of this?
You know, since then, the only thing I've noticed is increased energy. I found I have a lot more energy during the day, but really didn't have any other, you know, notable symptoms.
Yeah, well, Tom hit it on the head.
Worms
exactly
are good
right
for you.
Okay, here's the skinny. 1 billion people in the world have Ascaris. 1 billion.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. Most of them do not live in the United States of America, but about 1 billion people. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's about 500 million or 750 million, but about 1 billion people have Ascaris. It is very, very common. Did you have one worm? Well, that's like a mouse. We have a mouse in the house. Honey, there's no such thing as one mouse. You did not have one worm. Chances are you had more than one worm. And the old-fashioned treatment in 1900 for women who were overweight was to give them worms. Ascaris or tapeworm. Lose your weight by taking that worm, and women would swallow worms and then they would lose weight. And they do sap you of energy, and they're kind of yucky. Treatment is highly effective. And what you want to do is have one stool sample. If you want to be really good, you have 3 stool samples because that's how you tell. If 3 are negative, the worm is not there. That's what we assume. 99% cure. Homeopathic remedies do not do anything. They don't do anything for Ascaris at all, so I would stay away from it. But if you're concerned, more than one stool specimen will give you the answer. Do 3.
Okay, that's great. I will try that.
Yeah, you'll continue to have energy. Where'd you get it? Did you travel in Southeast?
I was in Thailand about a year ago.
It's been there it's probably been there.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
Yeah, it's been there for a year. But you have fond memories of Thailand, don't you?
Very fond, yeah.
Well, keep those fond memories, and your worm has fond memories of you.
All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much for the call. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, you talked about things that frustrate doctors. What are they?
Well, these are things that's very interesting. Surveys of doctors look at what frustrate doctors. So we're not talking about what frustrates patients. We're talking about what frustrates doctors.
Right.
A lot of the things that frustrate doctors are actually good for
medical care. By the way, there are a lot of things that frustrate patients.
Absolutely, 100%. We'll have to do that another week.
Yeah, all right.
But being the doctor in this conversation, I have to do the frustration of doctors. Meddling families in the room. Families in the room, yeah.
A lot of times multiple people come in for often. One
well,
person's
problem. Well, it's about 10 to 20% actually bring a spouse, a friend, a loved one into the room, and they'll go, well, wait a minute, you know, what about this, what about that?
Now, what's irritating about
Well,
that?
It irritates doctors because they want to just get the information from the patient. But frankly, it's good to have a meddling patient in the room because you'll get more information. Like, wait a minute, you're not taking that every day. Meddling patients are good. Frustrating a doctor is good for patients. Number 2, quitting medications without notice. That frustrates doctors. quitting medications.
That's really bad for the patients.
Totally. So guess what percentage of the people quit their cholesterol-lowering drugs without notice? Quit their drugs without notice
I would guess over a six-month period. I would hope it would be a low percentage.
50%. 50% of the patients tend to quit their cholesterol drugs. Now, over a period of years, most patients learn to take them, but 50% of their patients. Okay. Another thing that frustrates doctors, change my lifestyle. Well, I don't want to do that. There must be a pill for this, doctor. I don't want to change my lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. I can
that's frustrating. I'd like to say lose weight and have the person lose weight. It doesn't always happen.
I want to keep eating the stuff I eat. I don't want to have to change my diet.
I want to supersize my life by taking a pill. That's exactly what it is. Or another thing that frustrates doctor, hey, I need a prescription for this. You write this prescription for me.
Oh, I can imagine. It's hard for the doctor knows a prescription isn't going
to
do any good.
Well, or you don't want people to be frustrated. You don't need a prescription. I'll give you a good example is upper respiratory infections. People come in and they go, I want an antibiotic.
Right.
This is the worst cold I've ever had. And there's good proof that there's a 98% chance it's a virus. The way I do the skinny on that is I'll say, wait a minute, I'm going to send a prescription. Don't get it filled for 2 days. In 2 days, if you're not better or if you've got a fever of 101.5, get that prescription filled. I've discovered it's a good way to do that. And here's the last one that frustrates doctors. I want to get an MRI test for that. Now, do you know how much an MRI at the knee costs?
A lot.
$1,500 to $3,000.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to have surgery for that knee, by all means, sometimes an MRI will help. You don't necessarily need it because the surgery may be only $1,500, but you may need it. But if you're not going to have surgery, if it's not going to alter the course of it, why spend the money? And the problem with healthcare is that we order too many tests. Doctors order it because of medical malpractice. Patients want it because they want a photo. So that's frustrating to doctors and for patients. Mm-hmm. A great list.
Yeah, good stuff.
Good stuff.
800-462-7413. Here's a caller now, Zorba, in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I have some pretty serious headaches and sort of dizzy, unfocused feelings after I exercise. And my exercise is running.
Mm-hmm.
It mainly happens when the weather turns warm. In Atlanta, as you know, it's pretty hot.
Yeah.
And what worries me is it doesn't really happen until maybe a few hours after I cool down.
Hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily happen when I push myself in a long run. It can even happen in a short run.
Well, I was going to ask how long you run.
Well, I normally run anywhere between 5-6 miles. I run pretty aggressively. I'm a pretty fast runner. I'm not a distance runner.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, it can happen even after a 30-minute run. So even after, like, just 4 or 5 miles, it can happen.
And how often do you run?
I like to run 4 to 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's starting to bother me, I'm down to, like, 3 times a week I'm trying.
Got it. Now what symptoms do you actually have?
Well, I say headache, but it's more of a really unfocused, sort of dizzy, almost vertigo feeling that I have.
Mm-hmm. Do you hydrate yourself before you run?
I drink so much water.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke among friends. I drink a lot of water before and a lot of water afterwards.
Okay, so hydration is not the issue.
I don't think so.
Have you noticed a difference morning, afternoon, evening, different times of day? Is it being an issue?
I usually run in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
It seems like, as I peg it, it must be something that happens in the rest of the day.
Okay. What about during the wintertime when it's hot, not hot and muggy?
You know, I can really run. I can do twice the distance easily that I'm talking about. And I can, no, and it doesn't bother me at all. It almost energizes me like it's supposed to.
So it's a heat issue more than anything else.
I think it must be. But I do other forms of exercise. I like to.
Yeah, but aerobics is, you know, when you're doing aerobics, you know, using your major muscles in your body, you're using your legs, and that's why your heart is pumping so much.
Okay.
So you may be doing other forms of exercise, but if your heart is going up to 80% of its maximal heart rate,
right.
You're going to sweat more. It's going to be more aerobic, and that's going to be the issue. Do you wheeze at all? Are you wheezing or anything else? Just the headache?
Yes, mm-hmm. I am. I'm having a lot of trouble breathing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think you have. I think you may have exercise-induced asthma with a headache. That's going to be my guess.
Okay.
My recommendation is you talk to your doc and you look at whether or not a puff on an inhaler 15 minutes before you start to exercise will make a difference.
What kind of inhaler? I'm sorry.
It's an inhaler. An inhaler,
okay.
Proventil or Maxair. These are inhalers that are used called beta agonist inhalers, and they're used for people with exercise-induced asthma. And what may happen in the summertime is you're just – you may have a wheeze or a cough or a headache because you're not getting enough oxygen into your lungs. In the wintertime, it's drier, it's cooler, it's not as much of an issue. So
okay.
Try an inhaler before you exercise.
Before?
10 to 15 minutes before you exercise and see if this does it for you. Got to call your doc for it. It is only by prescription.
And do you think that that could be the case even though the headache and the dizzy feeling even happens a few hours after I cool down?
I think that this may be wheezy asthma. The inhaler lasts for about 6 to 8 hours. That's what I would try.
Okay.
Now, I mean, you may get headaches. It may be that you have headaches that are simply induced by exercise when you're stressing your body under a hot environment and you can't sweat off enough. And that's
okay.
Basically, it may just be overheating, in which case you may have to lower your run by 20 beats per minute.
Okay.
In other words, let's say your pulse is 140 or 150, you may have to go to 120 pulse,
okay.
And that may do everything for your headache. In other words, lowering the amount, the intensity, and going a longer distance may also work. But I think I'd try the inhaler first
okay. To
just see if it works because you like running fast, you like to push yourself. I think I'd do that first and see how that is, and let us know.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. You're really good, Zorba. I don't say that on the show.
I'm really good. No. I was just trying.
800-462-7413.
I'll give you the money later, Tom.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. A listener now in Kimberly, Idaho. Hello.
Hello, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
How can we help?
I'm calling for my husband.
Mm-hmm.
We are remodeling our kitchen. And this is every year we have this issue. He takes on a big project and his hands go numb and then he can't sleep at night. He describes the pain as a burning hot pain on both hands, but primarily the left is worse. And it's, again, mainly when he's laying down to go to bed at night. And in order to make it stop or to relieve it so they can go back to sleep, he has to either hang his hand over the bed or sit up so that... To seem to relieve the pressure, and it takes about 2 hours for it to stop.
How old is he?
43.
Oh, and a left-hander or a right-hander?
Left-handed.
Oh, so the hand that he uses the most is the one that's most affected.
Now, why'd you want to know how old he was?
I don't know. I thought, as you get older, you're more likely to have, not true.
Well, you know, I mean, as you get older, a lot of things happen.
I know.
That's the way that it is. No. This sounds like carpal tunnel. That's just what it sounds like to me. It sounds like carpal tunnel. So he's got pain in his hand, kind of sharp pain, lightning type pain. What does he do for it?
Well, nothing. We've tried. That was part of the reason I was calling. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find out what was causing it and if there's anything we can do to help because it seems to subside after we finish the project.
Yeah,
it's been going on for like 10 years.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I'll tell you, don't give him any projects. I mean, that's the first thing at all. You know, stop that honey-do list and he'll be just fine. Yeah. I can tell that your laugh is not a real laugh. That's it.
Well,
nothing
I've got to say that it's not me that motivates these projects all the time. So
he's the motivator of the project. Sounds like carpal tunnel. So I have a number of carpal tunnel and other repetitive sort of tasks. I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, he should try a wrist splint. You can get it from your doctor or you can go to a sporting goods store and you try a wrist splint. The best wrist splint is something called, don't laugh, Tom, a cock-up splint.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And a cock-up comes from the fact that birds have their head a little bit up. It looks almost, it keeps your wrist up slightly. That's mm-hmm. what it is. Sort of almost like you had your hand on a dashboard or something like that. I would try a cock-up splint. He can either wear it at night when he's sleeping. For some people, that's what they need. They just need it at night. And for other people, they need it at night and during the task. That's number one.
Okay.
So it's a non-pharmacological way of dealing with this. The other thing that sometimes works, believe it or not, is a tennis elbow splint because you put that on your elbow. It's not on your elbow, but it's just distal to the elbow where you extend the muscles, your forearm muscles. And sometimes that'll change the way that you're holding the hammer, doing the project, you know, working with a screwdriver and so on. That's the second thing. Ibuprofen or Aleve, I like Aleve better. It's a 12-hour drug over the counter, 2 tablets twice a day. Do not pay attention to the directions, which says 1 tablet twice a day, 2 Aleve twice a day, and the cock-up splint. And if that doesn't work, the tennis elbow splint, chances are more than 50% that he will reduce this pain. He may not get rid of it completely, but he'll reduce it. The other thing is exercise to build up those forearm muscles, because what does he do for a living? He's a teacher. Teachers are not known for their Popeye forearm muscles. So if he does his exercises and builds up his forearm, the muscle will take a lot of work.
They have to do a lot of chalk on a blackboard.
Chalk on the blackboard.
that works out a little bit.
With weights. Well, good luck on the next project. Before you know it, it'll be demolition derby, and it'll just get rid of the whole house and start all over again.
Let's hope not.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. And let's check in on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now, Zorba, and see if we can help out a bride-to-be. This question comes to us from Crystal in La Crosse, Wisconsin. She writes, I have a question about keratosis pilaris, a.k.a. chicken skin. I've been looking for home remedies and was hoping you may have some advice for me. I've tried prescription medications and have had no luck. It's simply a cosmetic issue, but my wedding day is approaching, and I would really like to get a handle on this before I walk down the aisle.
Chicken skin. I've never heard that phrase, chicken skin.
Did I pronounce that right?
Keratosis, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you pronounced that right. And you pronounced chicken right, too. Chicken.
Pilaris, did I pronounce
Pilaris it? Pilaris was good, too.
Oh, good.
Pilaris and the chicken, and that's it. So over-the-counter remedies. There's no cure for this. So this is where you go to the cosmetic aisle. I recommend a cosmetic aisle at a department store where they have lots of different seriously good cosmetics that are more expensive, because you're going to get married. It's worth spending that money, and go to the different places, Estee Lauder, you know, or a Clinique or one of the others. Look at them. Find a cosmetic person that you think will relate to and treat it cosmetically.
Does it go away?
Well, for some it doesn't. For some it's just the way that you're built. You know, your skin may be irritated and rough, but often the cosmeticians, and they are professional cosmeticians, because my mother was a cosmetician, and she said, I am a professional, and she really was. She took it seriously. Mm-hmm. We'll give you some good advice on what to do, and that's what I would recommend. Do not go the medical way. There is no cure for this, but there are things that you can do to make it look better. And you know what? You're going to look great. You're going to be in your dress.
Yeah.
You're going to be standing up there. Yeah. People are going to look at the face. They're going to see your angelic smile, and you're going to have a wonderful wedding day. Enjoy it.
And congratulations, Crystal, on behalf of the entire Zorba Pastor on Your Health staff and crew. Now, you can solve your wedding crisis by sending us your questions, comments, and tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And I do weddings on the side as Pastor.
Okay, we have our recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls, some more interesting topics to talk about, and our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, we have a recipe for chili beef kebabs.
Do you love chili beef kebabs? I mean, just as a concept, do you like the concept of beef?
Yeah, but you know what, I'm not that crazy about the last word in this recipe.
Kebabs?
Yeah.
You're not big on kebabs?
No.
Why not?
Well, you have that stick.
You got the stick, you got a little work to do.
And if you're with other people at a gathering, you have to know where to put the stick.
It's too complex, isn't it? For a simple mind like you, the kebab is too complex.
I'd like my stuff on a plate.
That's right. Piece of meat. Potato, you know, some nice overdone peas from a can.
No. Let's do the recipe.
Okay. Start out with 8 wooden skewers.
Eight wooden skewer.
Now, these are you know, these are the wooden skewers that you buy for kebabs. Now, the important thing is you want to basically put them in water and soak them. And the reason is then they don't burn when they're on the fire.
Oh, good
so
idea.
So just put them in water. Start out the recipe, throw the skewers in water, and they'll sit there. By the time you're done with the recipe, they're soaked enough. 1/2 cup of fresh cilantro. If you don't like cilantro, don't use it.
Okay, 1/2 cup of it if you like it.
Yeah, and you could substitute basil here if you don't like cilantro, or you could substitute parsley, which has a very nice taste.
Oh, I like
just
parsley.
As a garnish. Yeah. You could do that. 3 cloves of garlic, thinly sliced.
3 cloves of garlic, thinly sliced.
3 tablespoonfuls of good low-sodium soy sauce.
3 big T good.
That's right.
Soy
That's
sauce.
That's right. Because you know the difference. You go to the grocery store and you get LaCroix and it's awful. It's high salt and tasteless. Mm-hmm. Do not take the soy sauces that are high salt and don't have much taste. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we've got a teaspoon of a bunch of things. A teaspoon of grated orange zest. Orange zest.
A little tea. Grated orange zest.
That's right. A teaspoon of a nice hot sauce, a Sriracha. Nice
little
hot sauce.
Little tea, Sriracha.
A teaspoon of fish sauce.
Little tea fish sauce.
That's right. Thai fish sauce. That's a fish sauce. I know you've got that on your shelf, Tom. And a teaspoon of brown sugar.
Little tea brown sugar.
Okay. Now, 1 pound of lean beef sirloin cut into 1/8 inch strips.
Okay. 1 pound of lean beef sirloin cut into 1/8 inch strips.
Now, you could use ribeye. It's more expensive. You could use pork. It's less expensive. Mm-hmm. You could use chicken. Mm-hmm. That would be okay.
Yeah,
you could use veal, which is not politically correct.
Yeah, right.
Veal is not the politically correct beef.
This whole meat thing is not politically correct.
Well, that's okay. We're sliding on it. We're trying to get our public radio people to kind of sit with it. Okay, 3 peppers, yellow, red, and green, cord-seeded, chopped. That's what you want, cord-seeded and
chopped. Or you could use all of one. This is
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's just for color.
Okay.
Color counts. And some veggie cooking spray.
Vegetable cooking spray.
That's right. Now, the dipping sauce is interesting. We're going to use 1/2 cup of fat-free plain yogurt. Often the dipping sauce has full fat, half and half, or full fat sour cream. We're going to use fat-free plain yogurt. You cut down on the fat by using yogurt.
Half a cup of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at sour cream, the non-fat, it really doesn't taste very good at all. It has gummy stuff to make it that way, like this. 2 tablespoonfuls of chopped fresh basil.
2 big T chopped fresh basil.
1 tablespoonful of fresh lime juice. You can use reconstituted. Doesn't taste as good.
That's 1 big T of it.
That's right. 1 big T of that. And 1 teaspoon of fish sauce.
A little tea fish sauce.
So your skewers are soaking. Meanwhile, turn the grill on high. Do not touch it for 15 minutes. It's got to be hot. If you're going to use coals, let it sit down for 20 to 25 minutes. A grill that is not hot basically steams your beef and doesn't taste as good. It should be hot. Then puree the cilantro, garlic, soy sauce, orange zest, the hot sauce, fish sauce and sugar in a food processor. So it's all going to be basically pureed together. Then transfer the marinade to a Ziploc plastic bag, add the meat, seal the bag, toss it to coat, and leave it sit for about 30 minutes. You can leave it sit for up to 6 hours, but at least 30 minutes. Then combine the dipping sauce ingredients in a bowl, the yogurt, the basil, the lime juice, and the fish sauce, and you've got that sitting there. Now, here's the work, Tom. Here's what Tom doesn't like to do. Doesn't like to put it on, doesn't like to take it. Thread 4 pieces of pepper, 2 strips of beef on each skewer, alternating the beef and pepper together just like you do on a kebab. Everyone has seen a kebab. Just alternate it. And grill rack, take the cooking spray, put it on the grill rack so it doesn't, it doesn't stick, and then grill it until the meat is no longer pink, which is about 3 to 5 minutes, turning it. Yeah. Sometimes it's 10 minutes.
It does sound good. What do you need that little fish sauce in there for?
It gives it better taste. Fish sauce is a common sauce that is used. It's a concentrate. It's a very salty sauce, and it's used in a lot of Thai foods. And the fish sauce adds umami. Umami is the fullness of flavor. It's thought to be the 5th taste that we have in our tongue.
Umami.
Great. 242 calories for each kebab. Those calories come from fat. If you serve it with some bulgur or maybe a whole grain, maybe some brown rice or some couscous, it's dynamite. If you want this recipe or other wonderful recipes in our archives, go to www.zorbapastor.org. You can look at that recipe or sign up for our weekly podcast. That's www.zorbapastor.org.
A 800-462-7413. Toll free at 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. On we go to the phones, Zorba, and a listener in DeSoto, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how can we help you?
Oh, I have a nutrition question. I'm a farmer, but I do not like vegetables.
Wait a minute. You're a farmer and you do not like vegetables? That's an oxymoron. That can't exist.
Well, I'm not a vegetable farmer. Would that give me a pass? I'm a horse and hay farmer.
It would give you a pass.
Yes.
All right. So here's my question. I do like V8 juice, and for like between meals, I grab a 12-ounce can of V8, and it says that each 12-ounce can of V8 is worth 2 vegetable servings a day. And so if I drink 2 cans of V8, can I mostly fulfill my need for vegetables, supplementing with what fruit and vegetables I can tolerate?
I love this question, Zorba, because I use every single day of my life, at least when I'm at home and not on vacation somewhere, a can of V8 as one of my, how many do you need, 5 fruits or vegetables?
You need 20 a day, don't
you? You do not need 20 a day. But anyway, as part of my vegetable fruit daily thing, I use a can of V8.
Yeah. And actually, V8 is fine. Yeah, it definitely counts. You know, a few things about what people don't like about V8, it has more salt. You know, more salt than it should. So the low-sodium V8 is a little better for
you. No, it tastes... You can't stand a low-sodium V8.
It tastes awful. Doesn't taste as good. I'm not a biggie on salt. As long as you don't have high blood pressure, that's salt-sensitive, and that's about 90% of the people in the country. You can tolerate that salt. V8 is fine. Now, should it be the only thing? It's the variety that counts. V8 is mostly a tomato juice, obviously, which has other veggies that are put in it. They give it that robust flavor. I happen to like V8 also. Better than tomato juice, and it does count. Now, if you look at the average number of servings the average American gets, guess what the average number of servings the American male gets?
A vegetable?
Vegetables a day.
What do you think?
I think two.
That's right. Two a day. And women often get 3 a day. And guess what? One of those servings is at least half the time.
French fries.
That's exactly right. See? Tom could be on Jeopardy. He would have no problem. I mean, the French fry, which is clearly not the ideal vegetable a day. So the fact is, if you can do it with V8, that's great. But then you should supplement it with those veggies or those fruits that you like. Now, there must be some vegetable you like. What's the vegetable you like?
Well, when I told my sister I like corn, she pointed out that that's grain.
No, corn is not a grain. Corn is a vegetable. Corn is definitely a vegetable.
I like corn. I had this discussion with your producer. I can tolerate most vegetables raw, like broccoli, okay, is raw. Cauliflower is raw, is okay. I just don't like them cooked, which is the way I see them most often.
Sounds great. Enjoy your V8. Take your other veggies when you can. Eat your fruits and go for life.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I have a quick question. French fries, not so good. Baked potato, I assume, pretty good. How much better is a baked from the French fries?
Well, a baked potato is 80 calories, okay? It's 80 calories. Yeah. If we look at the potato itself.
Yeah.
If you take that potato and you chop it up and then you put it in oil, you double or triple the number of calories, and they come from oil. Mm-hmm. A tablespoonful of oil is 100 calories.
Yeah.
So the equivalent amount of French fries, instead of being 80 calories, mm-hmm. are often about 400 to 500 calories.
Now, see, there is a fast food joint.
Yes.
That gives you the option of a baked potato instead of French fries.
And what is that fast food joint?
It's Wendy's.
Really? So
yes.
You can get a baked potato at
Wendy's?
Yes,
and I do it
yes,
a
that's
lot.
Right, that's right.
And I think
and
I'm
you
helping
do it,
myself,
and, you,
and
you
I
are,
am.
You are helping yourself. And you do it because you tend to frequent anybody? Fast food joints,
I see.
So you are the fast food expert. When it comes to fast food, you're the man.
But a baked potato makes it okay.
Yeah, no. Well, makes it better. Makes it better, Tom. It makes it better.
800-462.
Almost tricked me.
800-462-7413. The toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener, Zorba, in Logan, Utah. Hi.
Hello, Zorba and Tom. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
I have another nutrition question for you.
Mm-hmm.
We just recently got a power juicer, and I was kind of wondering, it says on the box that you should drink the juice immediately, so I'm wondering if we were to juice at night, and then put it in the refrigerator and have it for breakfast, is it going to lose much of its nutritional value in doing that?
No. Not at all. Not at all. It doesn't have to be. No, it doesn't have to be drunk immediately. They're probably saying that because a few things happen. The sediment will go to the bottom of the juice, which is just fine. I mean, you just mix up the juice. That's the pulp that's there. The top part of the juice will get a little oxidized. So, you know, you want to put it in a sealed container and you won't have as much oxidation. But the fact is, the next morning, it's just as good. I mean, it really doesn't make a difference. I don't know why they would put that on there. That would be my reason. What they want to do is impress you with how good it tastes when it's fresh. But the fact is, convenience is as important as taste when it comes to that. I mean, you don't want to go do a juice press in the morning. You're not going to do it. It's too much work. How much did you spend on it? They're expensive things.
Oh, it was actually a gift, so nothing.
It was a gift. That's the best kind of thing to do, the gift of life. Yeah. Enjoy it. They're great things. They really motivate you to eat well. I think juicers are wonderful.
Yeah, we're loving it.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah, it doesn't make a difference. Drink it in the morning, make it at night. Just make it part of your morning ritual. Don't be like, well, Tom drinks Carnation instant breakfast with whole milk or fat-free milk?
1%.
1%. See, so, and that's what he has every day. I think juice is much better. We've got to make Tom into a juicer. Yeah. That's what he needs.
We'll send him one.
Oh, hey, I'll take you up on that.
Wait a minute. If I committed to a juicer for Tom, I got to be careful here. Thank you for your call.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, quick question on this, Zorba. Is a juicer any more healthy than just drinking the juice?
No, not at all. You can drink the juice. When you mean drinking the juice, you mean buying juice in the store?
Yeah, buying a container of
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, you're using fresh fruit. That tends to be healthier versus concentrate. Second of all, it tastes better.
No, the orange juice thing says not from concentrate.
Well, that orange juice is better. But often when you may have a juicer, it's not just orange juice. You're throwing in other fruits, and it makes it better because you're eating a variety of fruits.
Oh, okay.
There's something about making your own food that makes it better. And I'm serious. I'm not just being facetious. But there's something about being involved with the food that makes it better. There's something called the slow food movement, which is this concept that making the food and being with your food actually may be part of the eating aspect. You're looking at me as if I'm some kind of left-leaning, politically correct liberal that's spouting Martian talk. I'm just telling you why, like it is.
Moving right along, Zorba. Before the break, we have a little treat here. A bonus recipe.
Oh, okay.
Thank you to Wayne from San Marcos, Texas, for sending in this listener recipe. Now, this appetizer recipe is so quick and easy, I think I could even do it. Here's Wayne's recipe for Texas poppers, which he says are a flavorful recipe that, believe it or not, is not very hot. You'll need fresh jalapeno peppers and crunchy peanut butter. To start, butterfly the jalapenos and remove all the seeds and veins. Then, liberally fill the empty shell with the crunchy peanut butter. You can either serve whole by closing the butterfly or split apart and serve on the half shell. As I say, I could probably do this, but I don't know why I would want to. Peanut butter and peppers.
I'll have to try it, but I'm not going to try it with one of those super hot peppers. I'm going to try it with one of the,
I'm thinking of, why would you combine peanut butter with a pepper?
Well, it sounds like it's pretty good. Peanut butter goes with pretty much anything, Tom. I don't think it goes with steak, but it goes with almost everything else that we have. Peanut butter is good stuff.
I'll take your word for it. Again, thanks to Wayne from San Marcos, Texas, for today's bonus recipe. Now, if you have a recipe to share, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research coming up. We have our medical myth buster and, of course, more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, this isn't exactly research, Zorba, but I find it kind of fascinating, though. The question, why do doctors wear white coats?
Well, they wear white coats because years ago, the idea was that it would add a little formality to it, that you would separate yourself out from other people. It really also came from around the 1900s when a lot of medical schools, it's hard to believe, before around 1880, you could get a diploma in a year. You didn't have to be scientifically trained. And the idea was, well, this is training in a scientific method. Scientists wear white coats. I wear a white coat. And also, you got to think of it as sort of a vest. You know, like you have, you know, you're going to the Church of Medical Care, and that's where the white coats came
from.
Well,
now here comes the AMA.
Yeah, the AMA is voting now to get rid of
voting
white coats.
Voting not to wear white coats.
And they ought to do it. If we look at the issues surrounding white coats, we don't wash them every day, so they're dirty, right? I mean, you wear a white coat, you go into your office, and you go from room to room to room. Does it pick up germs?
Right.
Well, you think about it. If you wear the same coat every day, day in and day out, and cleaned it once a week, and, you know, and a lot of people don't even clean it once a week because it doesn't go outside the building, so it doesn't
get physically dirty.
It
doesn't look dirty at all.
It doesn't look dirty. You don't work in your garden in your white coat. You work with people, and if you get blood on the white coat, well, clearly you get rid of it. But that's the issue. And this goes along with an issue in England where the English Medical Societies, that's plural, said we have to get rid of ties and long sleeves because ties, once again, are not washed that often, unlike a shirt, and they're dangling in front of the patient, in which case bacteria can land on the tie. And long sleeves are the same thing. They sort of go down and they can, once again, you know, get into muck and stuff like that. So, but one of these issues is the fact that this is a uniform. At the Mayo Clinic, they don't wear white coats. They wear suits.
Yeah.
That's what they wear.
No.
And they're not allowed to come in without a suit and a tie or without a sports coat.
Now, you don't wear a white coat.
No, I don't wear a white coat because I'm a child of the 60s and I rebelled against a white coat. But I must tell you, during the first part of my practice when I joined old Dr. Kellogg and Dr. Dukeshan at office, we wore baby blue coats.
Oh, you did?
And, yeah, they had given up the white coat. They decided the white coat was too sterile and formal, and so they had blue coats.
So you tend
and
to
we
wear,
wore blue coats.
You wear a variety of things that don't tend to go together very well.
I don't. Well, I'm fashion impaired, so I wear stripes and stars and polka dots. But I don't wear a white coat. And if you look at people that are queried, most people say doctors don't have to wear white coats. Older people think that it's good, but older people are often a little bit more formal. I go along with the AMA. The time has come to take the white coat, put it on the hook, wave goodbye to it, and say thank you. You served a purpose.
1-800-462-7413. Toll free, 800-462-7413. Let's see if we can help a listener now, Zorba, in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I am wondering, Zorba, whether or not it is possible to have an allergic reaction to the sun. Over the past several years, I've been having what seems to me an allergic reaction. They're barely visible clusters of bumps. They're very small in size, smaller than the pin, or smaller than the head of a pin for the most part. They're clear. There's no redness. So it's not like a heat rash or what I've seen of heat rash or contact dermatitis. They're barely visible. You have to kind of hold the skin at an angle to even see that they're there at all. And what's interesting is that I only get them on my hands and on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they itch like crazy.
And they itch. And what kind of medicine are you on? You on birth control pills?
No, not on birth control, but I do take Tegretol for epilepsy, which I know creates a sensitivity to the sun. But I'm not on that.
Well, these are most of these are usually sun sensitivities that are drug related, and that's why I mentioned it about birth control pills. They're a common thing that are used, and a lot of women find when they go out in the sun they itch or they have a variety of rashes because it is the photosensitivity from the drug that causes the reaction. And Tegretol, there are a whole list of drugs. And nobody can keep track of it except for the pharmacists who have a computer program that actually keeps track of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recommend you stop your Tegretol drug used for seizures. You're taking it for seizures or migraine headaches? For seizures, this is probably from the Tegretol. That's the most likely thing.
And is there any way to treat it?
Well, have you put on sunscreen when you go outside?
No, Oh, yeah, always.
Yeah, does that make a difference?
No.
No, so you've tried sunscreen, which has a high number.
I always use that because I discolor really quickly.
Okay, because the high color ones are, you know, the higher the number, the longer it lasts, and really the better that it is. And you want something with UVA and UVB. And the other way is you treat the symptoms that are there. Right, so you treat it with some – what I would do is take Benadryl at nighttime, 20 to 50 milligrams at bedtime. It will make most people sleepy during the daytime, so I say take one or two generic Claritin, loratadine, in the daytime and see how that works. And that's what I would do. I mean, you may not – you know, get over this. And obviously the sun is something you're going to want to stay away from in terms of your arms. But otherwise, if you stay away from the sun too much, you don't get to go outside when the weather's nice.
Right.
So I think you're between a rock and a hard place in that this is going to recur, and I would just treat it symptomatically, and I wouldn't stop your drugs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Thank you so much for your call. 800-462-7413. And time now for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today, Zorba, that might also double as a Judge Zorba question. It comes to us from Robert in Wichita, Kansas. I'll let Robert explain. A friend that I work with has a disagreement with me regarding traditional jock straps and hernia prevention. Does wearing a jock strap when involved in a sport prevent hernia injuries? I believe that jock straps do not prevent hernia. Dean believes that jock straps prevent hernia.
Well, jock straps do not prevent hernias. There's no doubt about it. They don't prevent hernias at all. Jock straps were developed, over 100 years ago by a company which it's called the Bike Manufacturing Company, and they manufactured 95% of the jock straps years ago. And basically, it was to hold up the male testicles mm-hmm. while people were on the bike
right.
and bouncing up and down, and said it was more comfortable, and they claimed it prevented hernias. Now, of course, did anyone ever do a scientific study to see if it prevents a hernia? There's no reason to expect it to prevent a hernia, and they don't. There's no scientific data. Now, jock straps have lately fallen out of fashion. Now, I mean, when I was a young person in high school, I mean, you had to have your jock strap before you went on the basketball court, you know, because,
right.
you know,
right.
otherwise you couldn't go out there. I'm sure it was because they thought it wasn't safe. But the fact is, jock straps are not used as much anymore. Often they're just tight undergarments, or guys play in their boxer shorts, and it's a matter of comfort.
You
it's
mentioned
comfort
athletes.
Measure.
They wear cups often.
Well, it depends. A cup, if you're a soccer person or you're in football, a cup is rather important because otherwise
right.
you may be kicked in the testes, right. which we know is an uncomfortable
right.
situation.
But
a jock strap does not prevent hernias, and it's only for comfort then. If you like the way it feels, wear it. If you don't like it, don't wear
what
it.
What if you're doing long bike rides? Wouldn't it be kind of a good idea?
Well, it depends. Now, what did you do on your last long bike ride? Did you wear a jock strap?
My memory isn't that good.
There we go. That's right. You don't remember it. Some guys like it. Some guys do not like it. It does not prevent hernias. Save your money.
If you have a myth or a disagreement you'd like Zorba to bust, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, here is a listener with us now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
This is kind of an unusual question, but I was wondering if dogs' kisses have any healing powers, like small cuts, wounds, or rashes. And the reason I ask is because my family is a firm believer in this, and at first I just thought we were eccentric and we all thought that. But I've actually met several people who say, oh, yeah, if I have a cut, you know, I'll let my dog lick it, and it heals a lot faster.
Zorba will answer this, I'm sure. What kind of dog do you have?
I have two chihuahuas.
Oh, two chihuahuas.
Mm-hmm.
And you let them lick you when you have a wound of some kind?
I do. I mean, you know, if I have, like, a little cut or if I get a rash, yeah.
Do you
and
do
it
little,
seems to make it heal faster.
Do you do little kisses with them, too? I bet you do.
Oh, absolutely.
Love story with the dogs. That's it. Love story with the dogs.
So how about the healing power?
Well, it's an interesting thought. First of all, when we look at what dogs do, we know that their licks are not dangerous to us. But if they lick your wound, they're going to take the debris off the surface of the wound, which is what you do when you wash the wound in the sink with a washcloth. Because you want the surface, you want the dry material on the top of the wound, the blood and the pus that's dried on the top of the wound to basically get off the top, because that allows healing. So in that way, dogs may promote healing. It's not that they have, quote, a magical power to heal the wound, and some dogs will heal you more than other dogs, but the fact is they're going to remove the debris, and that's okay for the wound, just like we wash the wound. Now, we know that they generally don't carry germs that are bad for us, but there's something else dogs do when they lick the wound. They make you feel good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that makes you feel good, and that encourages endorphins in your body, and you feel better. And I think that has some healing power. So the answer to your family is undoubtedly yes. Dogs should lick wounds.
Well, that just made, people thought I was crazy when I told them that, and that just, you guys just made my day.
Good.
A pleasure. Yeah.
Thanks so much for the call. And before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Christina in St. Louis, Missouri. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I love your show. I have a question about salt lamps. I purchased one a while ago and have read that they purify the air by releasing negative ions. I've also read that they can help allergies and asthma. Have there ever been any medical or scientific studies about salt lamps and air purification?"
Well, the ion releasers can charge particles, and those particles can actually make dust stick to the wall.
But is that a salt lamp?
Well, if they claim that the salt lamp is actually charging particles, what you do is you go into a dusty room and see if the dust sticks to the wall to see. But that's what the ion generators do. I've never heard of a salt lamp.
I haven't either.
So I don't know if salt lamps are indeed ion generators. I do know that ion generators can cut down on dust, and they were traditionally things that were used in the house to make a house less dusty. Whether or not they actually decrease allergies has been debatable for years, just for years. But the fact is they probably don't do much for allergies. But they keep your house more dusty.
As far as salt lamps are concerned,
we're going to hear from the salt lamp lobby. The salt lamp lobby is going to let us know.
I wonder if there are pepper lamps.
That's a good
We want to hear your health and lifestyle questions. Just send them to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, not to be confused with Starsky and Hutch, are in the production booth making this hour happen. Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Dr. Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0711Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.